This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
You better run. Welcome to the show. My name is Alex, and what is your name, gentleman to the left of me?
I'm Kirk.
And the other lady that's to the right of me?
And I'm Sydney.
And we have entered the Lokiverse, a podcast dedicated to the Disney show Loki. And yes, we are going to be talking episode 3 and 4 today. And folks, if you didn't like Loki, these are the two episodes that kind of change everything, I think. And I think these are kind of some of the most important episodes of the first season to kind of get us set up for where we're going. So, Kirk, why don't you give us an awesome synopsis for episode 3 from Disney Plus?
This is going to be like super detailed, like last week. I mean, buckle up and get ready, because this thing is like a deep dive in synopsis.
Okay? Give us some details.
All right, here we go. Loki finds out the variant's plans, but he has his own that will forever alter both their destinies.
Which means what, Sydney?
I mean, I have no idea. I think this is a terrible synopsis. Like, Loki has plans?
I wrote that myself.
I guess these are... No, we stole this from Disney Plus. His plans were to get drunk and break the temp pad and then get them stuck on a moon during its apocalypse. And then, I mean, Sylvie might have some plans, but even Loki calls her out for saying that she just wants to kill the timekeepers and then create a power vacuum. So I don't know what the end goal is.
Yeah, but I think that's her plan. Her plan is revenge and to destroy what she sees as the fascist TVA and, you know, reclaim her own destiny or her own life. Loki has no plan. I mean, yes, right. Take the time pad and, you know, but it's all based on just trying to stay with her. I think he just wants to spend more time with her. That's how I took it, is that he's just winging it. And because he's attracted to her, he wants to spend as much time with her and continue to get to know her and understand her. She perplexes him.
Well, all I know about Loki and his plans are, I just keep going back to Harry Potter in the last movie. They're like, we need to come up with a plan. And then Harry Potter's like, it's never worked before. We just wing it. And that is the definition of what Loki is. Yeah, you know,
he does.
All
just
hell
wing
breaks
it.
We have a plan. All hell breaks loose and Hermione saves us. That's our plan.
That's
and,
right.
And I mean, that's kind of what Loki has been like. But I did want to, I don't know who wants to take this. What did you guys think of when you heard the title?
Well, Lamantis is the name. Lamantis One is the name of the planet where the where they end up in the apocalypse. So I dug into what Lamanti could mean. It's as a word itself, it's not a word, but Lamant is a word, and it means to express sorrow, mourning, or regret, you know, very strongly. So, I think both characters are lamenting their lives in this episode. I think, you know, Sylvie laments her having failed to complete her task. Her entire life goal seems to have been just destroyed and undermined, and she's just, all of this time and effort she's put into this is now gone, you know. And then Loki is beginning to realize that through his connection with her, the realization that he suffers from loneliness and that he's spent his whole life alone and pushing people away, and he's beginning to realize that. And I think he's lamenting, I don't know exactly how you pronounce it, you know, all of that wasted time in his life that didn't have connection to either his father, his brother, his, you know, to a romantic partner. Just, it's always been about mischief, and it's resulted in him being alone.
I have the exact same thing. I mean, I asked myself, what are they lamenting? And at first I thought it was going to be Sylvie's backstory. We don't really hear a lot of that until episode 4. So I think instead it's two people lamenting that they've never experienced love, not really romantic love, and then like limited familial love, because Loki can only name his mother as someone who cared for him, and Sylvie can't name anybody.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent point.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Lamentus is a interesting place, and I love how they start off where Sylvie is giving him crap in just in terms of the whole time. But I'm just saying, like, their little foreplay, it's like, you could have taken us anywhere in the whole entire time, and this is where you take us. And I don't think it was by, I mean, not that he did it on purpose, but it wasn't, I don't think anything is by accident. I think that he has done a great job of learning a little bit about Sylvie and also trying to see where they come together, even though they want to kill each other. So, Sydney, why don't you start us off with what were some of the things that you thought about on this third episode?
Okay. So, you know, I think that this episode didn't really move the plot along, but that doesn't matter much to me because it's absolutely one of my favorite episodes. It focuses on who these characters are and then obviously them falling in love. So one of the things that I wanted to bring up are their powers. We learn a little bit about what Sylvie's powers are. So what we know about both of them is that they both have physical strength and they are both great in combat. They both show us in the episode that they have those green power balls that they shoot out of their hands, which, okay, I don't think is something that can be taught. I think these are innate powers that like make a Loki a Loki. But we learn a little bit more about Sylvie's ability to do mind enchantment here. And we see Loki kind of be impressed. Well, we know that Loki himself has some mind enchanting ability, so I kind of wanted to contrast the two of them. So what we know about her is that what she can do is she can place herself in someone's subconscious mind. She creates fantasies out of their memories, and then she can communicate with that person in there. And we learn that she's supposed to be physically touching her mark, and that is easier to control weaker minds. And Loki, of course, you know, we know he's got a very strong mind, so he's immune to it. We see her try and mind control a Minuteman in the TVA hallway. And for a while I was like, he must have a strong mind, but I guess it's because you can't do magic in the TVA. So that's why he doesn't get mind controlled. She at one point like condescends to Loki that he is just a magician and knows that he has been taught his illusions. And, you know, he admits that they were taught to him by his mom. So let's contrast what Loki can do as far as mind control, because we've seen him do some mind control stuff in the past, like in technically his recent past surrounding the 2012 attack on New York. He both mind controls Dr. Selvig to get the Tesseract. And then he obviously like will mind control Hawkeye as well. We do know that he gets the Mind Stone. I honestly always
hold
thought
on. He doesn't, just a point of editorial comment. He doesn't mind control Hawkeye. It's the Mind Stone that allows him to control so that's not a power he has.
Right. But that was what I always placed it in my mind, that he mind controlled Dr. Selvig to get the Tesseract, and then he got the Mind Stone from the Chitauri, and then he mind controlled Hawkeye, definitely because of the Mind Stone. But like, was he mind controlling Dr. Selvig as an innate Loki power, or did they just not show us his obtaining the Mind Stone in the proper pattern, and he had it before he took control of Dr. Selvig? Regardless, like,
doesn't he have the staff when he touches the staff on Selvig, and that's how he gets control of him mentally?
I just remember that it was a post-credit scene for Thor, and Selvig is just like all of a sudden in the S.H.I.E.L.D. compound talking to Nick Fury, and Nick Fury is like, here, you want this really cool object? And he's like, yes, I do. But you don't see Loki physically near him. Honestly, I think we thought Loki was dead.
Loki's reflected, I believe, behind Selvig in like a glass, so that we know that that's who's behind him.
Okay, so you think he had the Mind Stone then, which does detract from what we understand of him having enchanting powers.
I think Thanos gave him that staff, which had the Mind Stone in it, and so that he could lead this war against Earth to get the two other stones that were on Earth.
Okay, but there is another event where Loki has some mind control power. It's in Ragnarok. He touches Valkyrie's head, and he's able to like see her memories and remind her of her memories. So I think he has some powers there, which is why I just think it's kind of interesting that he expresses a lot of amazement to her, which I think it is amazing, because at the end of the day, I don't think even if he has some mind control powers, he's ever been able to place himself in someone's memory and communicate and influence them through conversation. Okay.
Yeah, they're not on her level.
Yeah, absolutely. So maybe I look for plot holes, but I did find one and I wanted to bring it to you guys. She says that she has to be physically touching someone to control them, but she mind controls like 5 people in Rock's cart, including B-15. She never touches one of them. And we know that B-15, I think, glimpsed some of her human memories during that time. So maybe a bit of a plot hole.
She jumps from person to person in that sequence, but don't they like leave the environment and then come back? She comes back as another one?
No, I think one touches another.
Right. Transferring.
Someone will come up to the other one and then that person kind of falls on the floor. Like
so it's almost like she possesses them and then she can transfer to a different body through contact.
Okay. But still those bodies stand alone without physical touch for long periods of time. It really doesn't matter. Like, it's definitely a minute point that I don't need to worry too much about. So, as far as powers go, we also see Loki stop a falling tower in Shuru from falling on them. I thought that was amazing. Yeah, I just like to see them both in action like that.
Yeah, they work very well together. And like I said, their foreplay is really kind of interesting. And they were both having, you know, keeping their cards close to their vest. Loki was keeping the pad really close to his vest physically and emotionally, and what she can do, she was keeping very close. So Kirk, what was some of your thoughts about this episode?
Well, I think that I just wanted to touch some more on the point Sydney made, because I think that the show, I had notes on it, and I don't know why they didn't print, but I'm going to just try and wing it here. I think the show's trying with the Sylvie character. First of all, there's a character in the comics called the Enchantress. And she's a Thor villain that has amazing powers of enchanting, right? And that's what she does. She enchants people and gets them to do stuff for her. And she's a bit of a witch kind of character. And some of the same similar kind of powers as Loki, but this heavy emphasis on enchanting. And then also you've got the female Loki. And I think that, and the Enchantress name, by the way, in the comic, her first name is Sylvie or Sylvia or something like that. So I think they decided they were going to try and take those two characters, the female Loki and the Enchantress, and kind of combine them into the MCU's version of the Enchantress, which will be a Loki variant. So, I think that's why she has that power or whatever. I loved the dialogue again. I loved the chemistry between the two of them. It was really a showcase episode for the two of them to you know, cement their relationship as characters together. I thought that was great. Some of the lines that caught me, when they first land on that planet and they're arguing about the temp pad, and she's like, "You're not the only tech savvy Loki," and she's like, "Don't ever call me that." And he's like, "What, tech savvy?"
And so, no, Loki.
I don't know.
I know that was pretty funny.
Then when they're after the thrown off the train, and I thought it was interesting that she's going on about now her mission is messed up, and he's like, "The mission, what, your glorious purpose?" Yeah, all Lokis have to have their glorious purpose. I thought those just the two little quips that were funny and examples of their amazing chemistry together. And I thought the episode brought the plot along, but I thought that it's so trimmed, it's so lean, it's so every dialogue, every scene is crucial to the pushing forward the story, and in a way that some of the more recent series and many other TV shows often lack. You know, there isn't a setting or a scene or a dialogue or character interaction that doesn't help bring me more into this world and want me following the story.
It wasn't a criticism. It's just in the sense that they start the episode almost on Lamentous One and they end it on Lamentous One, and they're no closer to getting off of it at the end. We also don't learn her backstory, which I think my memory of watching this first time around, that she did come forward with that information earlier. So it really was about them establishing, you know, their relationship and breaking down those boundaries. And it was gorgeous. I loved that about it. I mean, honestly, as a viewer of, you know, drama and everything, that's what I'm looking for, is that character development. But they did it in such an imaginative and exciting place. I mean, those sets were insanely gorgeous. I think that most of them were hand painted and actually built. Like, it wasn't like watching Quantumania where you knew you're watching five actors run around a soundstage. Right. You know, there were physical sets for them to interact with, the color, you know, the planet coming towards this moon, them running around Shuru was, I mean, an absolute masterpiece. Yeah. So I loved the episode.
Yeah. They introduced with some of the new Star Wars shows, like Mandalorian, this technique of filming in this theater, basically with a projected background. And it has created a fantastic, almost theater-like play experience, I think, for the actors, and helps them, I think, dramatically in terms of being able to emote and feel like they're in the midst of this as opposed to working on a green screen. But it has its limitations. And I think, you know, your point about Quantumania is a perfect example. That whole thing looked like everything was shot inside that thing, and it became like everything. Every time they're running, it seems like they're running in a circle, and it was just a mess. So it has to be used correctly and sparingly. And to your point, I think that, you know, when you bring in the actual sets and create some actual environments for these people to live in, we feel it as viewers. You can tell the difference.
I think it was in the Marvels Assembled that the set of Shuru was about 16 feet tall and that everything above that was CGI, but everything they were running through was like black light paint, and there was the tunnel that kind of enters in that, you know, city. The only thing CGI'd in was the arc itself, like off in the distance.
Yeah. What did you think, Alec?
I think that first off, you need this episode to establish their relationship. I mean, yes, they never left the planet, but what did they do? They worked together. When they were getting onto the arc, that was the best of both of them, I think. And, you know, they both know that they need each other to survive. I think that the good thing about Loki is that he is playful. The bad thing about Loki is he's almost too playful because he got himself drunk and da 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 da. If you go back to when they met that woman, they both tried to use their charms, so to speak, and they realized that that's not what it was called for. And I think them learning how to work with each other kind of really, it makes it an interesting love story for that one moment. And with the rocks coming falling down on him and everything else, it was really kind of, like you said, it was beautiful scenes and big scenes. And it's something that you would expect from a movie more than you would a TV show. And I think that's the main thing about Disney Plus. When they're doing this, they're not making TV. They're making movies that are broken up into pieces that are on TV. And I think there's a big distinction about that. And to your points about the new way they're doing this, I believe they started it with Lion King. When Jon Favreau did Lion King, he brought it to the Star Wars universe, and then they brought it to the MCU, if I'm not mistaken. And I could be, because I saw one of those assembled or something with one of those, and they were talking about how they first used it in Lion King.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And it really changed. I think it changed the game, because you're not looking at the guy in green. You're looking at something, and you can kind of react a little bit better. And to your point, it's just a little bit more seamless. But that said, you know, we went into a lot already. Sydney, did you have anything else that you wanted to? You're not. It's not coming through, hon. Now you're good.
You just gotta smack it.
Yeah, my mute is up here at the top.
You gotta smack it around like Sylvie does with
That's
Loki.
Right.
Is this like a legit mute button up there? Yeah, so my point number two is called Love is an Imaginary Dagger. Yeah. So this is about their time on the train together. So I think an important question is, why would two Lokis fall in love with each other? There is the obvious narcissistic reason that, you know, even Mobius points out in episode 4. He says it's sick and twisted and pure chaos that could break reality. I don't think that, though. Like, while it's on brand for Loki to fall in love with Loki, my argument is that Loki hasn't ever really loved himself, so why would he love a different version of himself? So he's not falling in love with her because she's some obvious reflection of him. Instead, he's found someone that when he looks into their eyes, he's not seeing judgment, and he's not even thinking any longer about whether that other person is judging him, which is why he was able to, like, get drunk on that train. He's having a good time. Like, he can actually put a lot of things aside and not just be in his head all of the time.
Yeah, I think the love is a dagger is a very important dialogue point.
I think another reason she's not like him is because she doesn't actually have a lot of those same self-esteem issues. She was removed from Frigga and Odin and Thor when she was young, so she didn't develop some of those same problems that he has. Instead, she's really angry, but she's adventurous and she's self-sufficient. And
no, she's just jaded in other ways, that's all.
Yeah, she's not a simple person. So my question is kind of like, what does she see in Loki? Like, I know what I see in Loki, and I think she sees that too. But is that gonna last?
Damn.
Right? Because he's he's very charming.
Oh, yeah.
But he's also like breaking the damn
tempad. But no, I think to your point, I think what she sees in him is, and I use this word, you know, tongue in cheek, but not, he's got a lot of panache. And when he does something, he can really do it. And I think Sylvie realizes that she has found, just the same way Loki's saw this in Sylvie, they've almost found their equal. They have the same purpose. They want to be the god or goddess of mischief. And they might want to do it in a different way. But I really think the chemistry, so to speak, it just really brings them together, because they're like, oh my God, there's somebody that's so much like me, but so different all at the same time. So I think that's why.
I thought the love is a dagger line, I think, shows her an insight into him that was brand, like, was new. Like, all of a sudden, I think with that, even he, as he's describing it, kind of at the end, he gets done and he's like, wow, that is fucking empty, huh? It's
like, which is great, because he's supposed to be this really smart metaphor guy, you know,
right.
It makes him sound smart, but he doesn't get his feelings hurt when she agrees with him that it was really dumb.
Well, it's not just dumb, though. It's insightful, not insightful. It's a window into him, into his lack of connection, his detachment, his inability in the past to have connection with the people. And a realization of the amazing loneliness. And all of a sudden, I think for her, she sees the weakness in him and she sees the damage in him that's like hers, and all of a sudden they have a kinship, you know. So I thought that was a really important, interesting too, that they turned that into a poster. Yeah, really? Disney Plus did for the marketing. But I have that as a thing to talk about, so we'll get to that.
You know what's funny? The only thing that would have made that scene better is if he had looked into the camera and broke the fourth wall. I mean, after what he was saying, like, how corny is that? But it, like you said, that was a perfect scene. So what else you got, Sid?
So, okay. So more just about like kind of their relationship. I'm going into their sexuality and then a little bit like gender expression, because I don't think that we mentioned last week that when you see the TVA kind of intake form on Loki, it says gender colon fluid. Right. So I wanted to bring that up. And then that reflects to a lot of, like, I didn't even realize the second part, but first to the comic book experiences of Loki. And then second, actually also to Norse mythology about Loki. Yep. So in the comics, he inhabits Sif's body. He's also brought back after Ragnarok as a female. And then in like Loki, Agent of Asgard, he is doing like gender shifting as well. And I think the pronoun there is used for them at that point. And then the Norse god Loki like shapeshifts into a horse and births her own children. So I think some of Loki's children are actually she carried. Okay. But then I wanted to talk about how they both discuss their sexuality.
Well, hold on before you move on. He actually mm-hmm. specifically states in the comics in 2013's Young Avengers number 15 that, you know, Asgardian sexuality is not, you know, gender is not really a thing, you know. There's aww. Sexual positions, but not sexuality.
Nice.
But he also says that in the show. He just kind of says that it's fluid. So, I mean.
Right. But in other words, what I did a little reading, and Kate Heron, who was the director, you know, is also bisexual. And I think she felt that since the character, both as Sydney pointed out, in Norse mythology and in the comics has been bi, that she felt it was, and she's bi, she felt it was really important that she bring that to the show's character. And
and did you know that she, so that scene where they're sitting across the table from each other in the train, you've seen the train car the entire time is full of like lavenders and purples and light blues. She did all of that filming and all of that coloring on purpose because those are the colors in the bisexual flag. I was just like so fascinated. And I think that's just so cool.
Yep. Very cool.
Yeah. That is my love is a dagger.
In fact, I think the whole, not just the train sequence, if you think about it, the whole episode, at least on the planet, is shot in those colors. Everything's purple mm-hmm. and green and blue.
Like that development for them. And kind of like what makes Loki a Loki. Because the way he said it, you know, he said, she said, like, he might have would-be princesses or perhaps another prince. And he says, a bit of both, I suspect the same as you. Right. And she just nods. You know, I mean, it's a Loki. And I love, again, that this was another time both of them felt absolutely not hesitant and super comfortable and safe to talk about themselves.
What do you guys think of the line that she says in that scene about her having this relationship with the postman who's waiting for her? Was that just a joke, or do you think that's...
I thought it was a throwaway joke. I no longer think that, though. Yeah. Do you know that in the new footage for the new, like, hype trailer, I think she might be driving the TVA mail truck. I'm like, do you know him?
That's funny. Yeah, I thought it was interesting. You know, there's the famous movie, The Postman. Isn't it called The Postman?
Right.
And it's about an affair, you know, so... Maybe they were just kind of saying, I just have these casual kind of affair things. You know, that's, mm-hmm. I don't know.
Totally.
Since we start to get the further into this idea that I think it's near the end of the episode that she tells him that the TVA is all variants.
Right.
I think this, you know, this is obviously one of the most important twists of the show because it just changes, it puts everything upside down. And also, I think, kind of unites them. And also, it's Loki now starts to develop his glorious purpose with that realization and finding that out. Because now he's determined to bring that awareness to Mobius and to essentially free everybody at the TVA. So I think it's important. So I did a little bit of digging on the time variance authority. First appeared in Thor in 372, 1986, created by Walt Simonson, who's one of the, considered one of the greatest runs of Thor comics. He both wrote and drew many of them, but this one was drawn by Salva Schema. The TVA originally paid homage to the longtime Marvel editor and writer Mark Gruenwald, and the TVA staff were all visually designed as clones of Gruenwald. So they weren't alternate alternate variants, but they were clones in the comics. And they were all supposed to look like this comic book creator, Mark Gruenwald. They claim responsibility for monitoring the multiverse and can prune timelines if they're deemed too dangerous to exist. They also take action to prevent other beings from altering the past or future. And they were first seen allowing a character called Justice Peace, who was a lawman from the future, to travel to the 20th century in order to stop the killer Zaniac, which we know now is going to be a component of next season. And so I just thought it was, you know, since we're learning about the TVA's people being all variants, that we get a little bit of background of how that was developed in the comics.
I like it. Nice.
I love it. I love it. So Sid, do you have any other points?
No, actually, I think that what Kirk just said is the perfect segue into reading the synopsis for episode 4, which focuses on these characters, these agents finding out that they're variants. So if you're ready.
Let's do it.
Episode 4, the Nexus event synopsis. Frayed nerves and paranoia infiltrate the TVA as Mobius and Hunter B-15 search for Loki and Sylvie.
Well, I gotta say, the opening to this was awesome on so many levels. If you're a fan of Walking Dead, if you're a fan, I mean, this one kid goes from Walking Dead to the MCU to Star Wars. I mean, she's set for life.
What is Kaylee Fleming, right? What does she play in Star Wars?
She was in The Rise of Skywalker. She was young Rey. That's it. She was young Rey.
Oh my gosh.
So, so she plays only two small little parts in terms of the storyline, meaning young Rey and, you know, Rick Grimes' daughter, the little shit kicker. And then she plays this little part, you know, that has really nothing to do with anything, not, you know, but young Sylvie. And I just love that they had that little cameo. And I love the way that they kind of rewound just a little to get us up to date to why Sylvie is the way she is. And since Sydney, you went first, I'm going to have you go first, Kurt. What was some of the things that you were thinking about when you saw this?
Well, I think since we're talking about it, the Sylvie backstory, I mean, it's heart-wrenching. You know, she's sitting there playing with toys. She seems completely innocent, and just out of nowhere, they come and they grab her and they just kill the timeline. And it just also reinforces for us as the viewer that every time they do this, they're killing off entire worlds, billions of peoples just snuffed out. And I think it's just incredibly tragic. And I think also, her being adopted, I think Loki's being adopted as from a frost giant, but and grew up in the shadow of Thor. It just doesn't even compare to this poor child, right, who's been ripped out and had to defend herself and survive on her own, slipping through time. And then the worst of it is that the only way to do that is have to survive in the midst of apocalypses. I mean, just I can't believe she's as together as she is. You know, I can't believe she's not more fucked up than she is. You know,
she's pretty fucked
up a little bit.
No, she's just misunderstood. Yeah. That's all.
I like that about her.
But what I found interesting about that scene was, who was the one that was in charge? Who was the one taking her out?
Yeah, it was Renslayer. Yeah.
Which I find was very interesting, because of the fact that she's been pulling the strings for a very long time.
Yeah, well, she's... Yeah.
And...
Yeah.
she's worked her way up, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
That was also really powerful because Den turns around and just kicks her in the gut in the elevator near the end and says, I can't remember what your nexus was, you know?
Oh, I know. Oh, my God.
What I took you from and tortured you from and ruined your life for, I don't even remember.
Okay, so my point one is titled, It's Probably Not Because She Was Born a Girl. And I think that she was being a bitch on the elevator, saying, I don't remember why I pruned you. But I also think that if she does remember, she's not going to tell, because I don't think it's as simple as that. I mean, there's complicated theories out there that, and I don't remember if in episode 6, He Who Remains might say, you know, I did this to get both of you here for whatever reason, but it does seem orchestrated by whoever's in charge. And again, not because she was born a girl. So like what I wrote is that, you know, she explained she was pruned because she was born the goddess of mischief. That the universe was trying to break free. So it manifested chaos. And the universe made Loki a girl this time. I guess my theory is that maybe, and if it's not being orchestrated specifically to get her with our Loki and then to the doors of the Citadel, that maybe she was pruned because she didn't like suck as much as the other Lokis. And I say that with love, but Lokis are... not pruned if they are failing at their attempts to rule. They're pruned, in my theory, like once they start succeeding at something or once they secure actual power or look like they're going to secure it. So maybe she was the only Loki variant among timelines that showed like honest to God potential to rule from a young age.
That's a good point.
Yeah. So what do I say next? Why would He Who Remains think that leaving is successful? Right. Okay. So this is my question. You know, if He Who Remains wants to prune any timeline with a decent Loki, anyone who like gets some power, like gets a Tesseract, how does that threaten him in any sort of way? I mean, how would that timeline birth a Kang? Like, where did Lokis become so important that, we could have universal incursions because of them. I don't know. I have here also that I just wanted to say that they're stronger together than alone. And that when they hold hands in episode 4, which is when they find them in Lamentis, when they hold hands, that's like a huge time branch emerging from the sacred timeline. Yeah, I'll just fade off on that.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's how they find them. You know, it's just they create this a nexus that they've never even seen before, the power of it, which I think does hint to your point, which is that that's part of why He Who Remains wanted them. They have the ability to do things that no other, you know, entities within the universe can do. But whether they can get through their own personal baggage and damage in order to do it, is the issue and the question.
So he sent them on a quest so that they could cement their relationship and find each other. That's beautiful.
And I think the sad thing is the tragedy of it, and all good plays have a tragedy, is that her damage is just so severe that when she gets to the end, it dictates her choice, and that, you know, she kills him, and she's just too broken to be able to see past her pain. And see, you know, and I think Loki's damaged as well, but he's at that last moment starts to realize there's something beyond us and beyond this, you know, and we should wait and consider this. And she's just too broken. She's like, no, I got to have revenge and I got to set everybody free, you know? So,
yeah, which I get it.
Yeah. But it's interesting that you brought up too, that, cause I hadn't thought of it, that the whole impetus for her being pruned was because she was born a female Loki. And, you know, what does that say? You know, what is the show perhaps trying to comment on socially? And that, you know, women who gain power or who can lead or be the source or action behind change are a threat. are a threat to the establishment and have to be somehow, you know, taken off the table.
I mean, I love your point, but I don't know, because you're right, but I don't think that's where He Who Remains is going, because he's pruned. I mean, and this is just from memory, because I'm excited to watch episodes 5 and 6, but he's pruned President Loki, right? He's pruned a child Loki who's been able to actually kill Thor. So he does seem to take out Lokis that aren't on his path of complete and utter failure. So it's not just women. It's all of them.
Well, he also has women in power. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at the two major women in the TVA that we talk right. about. One talks directly to the entities, and the other one is the head of security, so to speak. Right. And a lot of the women were in security, or, you know, the bees, so to speak.
Right. Mm-hmm. But they were women who followed the patriarch. They were women who were abiding by the structure, being good, loyal soldiers. And I think once whatever it is that makes a Loki got into in the female form, there was the potential for much more than that, and for the ability to challenge the patriarch. I don't know. It's just a theory.
Mm-hmm. And trust me, we'll get all sorts of feedback telling us that you're completely right and completely wrong.
and both will be right.
And yeah, both will be right, because that's okay. So Sydney, on that wonderful note, since you are the female of our group, why don't you take our next point?
All right. So my next point is about the glass rings that we brought up last week. And what I'm talking about are Mobius's, rings that you put on a table when you put your glass down. Okay. We were debating about whether or not Mobius remembers having put them there or not. Like, I don't know that I completely think that when Renslayer says, you know, essentially use a coaster, and he's like, maybe your other agent boyfriends put those there, that he's 100% denying that that he put them there. But I have this theory. I think I brought it up when we talked about the trailer, but I think where we're going in season 2 is that we're going to come to understand that the TVA used to actually be run by He Who Remains directly. And then he eventually, and I don't know the reason for this, but he created those three figureheads and then erased everyone's memory. And that'd be like the second time he erased their memory, because once would be the memory of their life, you know, after they were pruned. And then the second time would be when he puts himself out of the public eye and implants himself with the space lizards. So I think that Renslayer isn't someone who gets her memory wiped. And I think that's because she's like the only person in his inner circle, because she does defer to him, like Kirk was saying just a second ago. And I guess that I really am just saying that I think that there is a really strong chance that they're going to start to explore a romantic history with He Who Remains. And I think that would be dating back to when he was Victor Timely, because we do see in the trailer her dressed in that old timey, you know, outfit. So I think that she might stem from that time period. And I think the question that I have is, when we watch season 2 and Loki has, in my theory, been sent back after He Who Remains' death back to the TVA, after Sylvie has killed He Who Remains, like, no one remembers him. So I think that he has gone back to a time prior to him having like put in those space lizards. And I don't think that we're going to see those rings being there. There's going to be fewer of them. All right. So about Ravona Renslayer, I just like hated her this episode. I mean, I think M'Batha Ra is great at being a bad guy, and I don't think that I can watch season 2 to see her do the exact same thing. Like, I don't think that I can handle her being a, you know, I'm the boss and lying and manipulating everybody. So either she's been loyal to Kang because she's known him since the real world and he never erased her memory, or that she's just blindly loyal at the end of the season, even after understanding that she's a variant. and that we're going to see a redemption from her in season two, because it looks like her character is going to go on a quest to get answers, maybe directly even, you know, from the Citadel at the end of time.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea or a great theory. I hope they do it. I hope they do take her character through a journey, because right now she just is, you know, the evil bureaucrat at the top of this pile of crap. But I think she's more complicated than that.
We have to find out how she got to where she got. I mean, you just don't get there by accident. There's probably sacrifices that had to be made. The fact that they didn't let anybody interrogate C-20, and then, you know, you find out what really happened, you don't get to that place overnight. You know, like you said, Sydney, maybe there is a Victor Timely relationship or something going on, but hopefully we'll get some more answers in season two about why she does what she does, because I think it's going to be really important, because at the end of the day, at the end of this episode, we find that the timekeepers aren't even real.
Right.
And she can't not know that. I mean, and if she did, then come on, that's a whole nother.
Well, you see, it's ambiguous to me, mm-hmm. because there is the scene where she goes in and meets with them and then comes back out and talks to Mobius. And it's kind of like, if you knew what the game was, why would you bother with that? You know what I mean?
Like, is it just a show to get on the gold elevators and then go into that room? But that room is so weird. Like, it's an interior office room in an office building, and it's like really foggy in there. And like, they keep on those fog machines all day, and she just goes in there and stands for a minute and then comes downstairs and is like, Mobius, you have to do whatever they say or something.
Yeah, it's almost like a small theater. You know what I mean? Because they're up on the stage and... which I think is, you know, it's a show.
Well, you know, right when you guys were saying that, all I could think of is one thing: Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know that's such a cliche, yeah. But that cliche has been used so many times in so many different stories.
Do you guys watch Ted Lasso?
Oh yeah.
There's a theory about the, I don't know if it's the whole, I think it's the whole show, but very pronounced in the final episode, that a lot of it's all based on the Wizard of Oz, and that the theory goes through like which person represents what. And
oh wow,
yeah, that's kind of funny. But yeah, it's been played to death.
No, but I'm just saying, like, everybody, to Sydney's point, everything is, it's always about a quest. That's what this comes down to, is what is Loki and Sylvie's new quest. And I think, to your point, when she took his head off and she was just, you know, going crazy, she didn't even realize that it wasn't real.
Did you see the other two timekeepers laughing?
Yeah, they're laughing, which was really demented.
It's weird. Like, were they programmed to laugh? That was demented. Good word.
Yeah, and I think and the episode really races at the end, which is great. And, you know, soon as the domino falls of, you know, Loki telling Mobius that they're all variants, it just starts to just collapse all around there. And I think the for me, the most painful one to watch was the or not painful, but I just felt a lot of pain for C-20. I felt a lot of the pain that B-15 was feeling as she starts to come to the realization, you know, she's so tortured by it. She drags this prisoner off to that scene again and stands in the rain with her, which is very symbolic of, you know, kind of like being a baptism and being reborn and standing right in the water. And it just, it was very, very, very emotional. I felt like all of these people were very sad. I even feel like Renslayer, you know, is somewhat tortured, you know?
Oh, I think she's the most. I think she's the most tortured, quite honestly, because she's the keeper of the secrets. She knows what's behind the curtain. So although you can beat her up all you want, and I'm not saying that you shouldn't, it's that think of the weight of what she has to do on a daily basis. She's got no personal life, but she sort of has a personal life, and she's got to balance this whole entire thing and there's supposedly all these thousands of people that work for the TVA, and yet it only comes down to a handful of people, and those handful of people are pretty much her.
Mm-hmm. If I find out that she's done all of this just to protect her boyfriend, and her boyfriend actually ends up being he who remains, I mean, I will have absolutely no pity for her, but I just don't think that's going to be season two. I think we will find her to be, I don't think I know how to use the word anti-hero, but she'll be a redeemed person. I like that you brought up B15, because I think that her storyline and the scene with Mobius and Renslayer in her office, where Mobius is trying to get information from Renslayer, and she's obviously just lying through her teeth to him. I think that, and then B15 are the most important parts here. And like, she B15 crying in the rain. So like, we hadn't really gotten a lot from B15 this entire season. You know, she's kind of been wooden because she's kind of had to have been. And I really look forward to seeing her, you know, with all of these expressions in the next season. But
it seems like in the next season, we're almost going to, we've gone from a show about Loki to a show about, and then him and her, to a show about a team.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
And that's because he's finally starting to build connections. He's finally giving up this persona of, you know, love is a dagger, and instead, you know, love is connection to people. And he's starting to care about these people, and they're all kind of covering each other's back and pulling together and going to be a team. And I think that's going to be one of the main differences dynamically for the second season.
But I think you could see it starting when he was locked in that prison for that one scene where he kept getting his ass kicked. And it was like Groundhog Day. But he did end up saying in one of the iterations, I'm an awful person. I'm a narcissist. Yeah. I mean, he kind of just came clean. And Loki would have never done that in episode one. And we're only at episode four, and he's doing that. So, I mean, and I know there's only six episodes, so he's got to arc pretty quick. But I think that's the one thing. I mean, Kirk, did you always like Loki, or was he just kind of, I mean, I know you've always had a, but in the comics, was he ever?
No, I didn't care for Loki as a villain in the comics at all.
That's what I mean. So he's never been a good guy. And now there's like so much sympathy for him, I would think.
Well, he's changed a lot. He's changed a lot in the modern comics. You know, they've worked harder to bring a lot more depth to him. He's had different personas. There's been the female version. There's been a child version. There's, you know, he's been the Sorcerer Supreme for a while. He took over for Doctor Strange. They've done a lot more with him. And I think that's because the movies showed that, you know, he was so much more of a rich character.
That's what I was going to say. All of that kind of followed the MCU, making him, you know, empathetic. Yeah. I did feel bad for him at one point in the comics. There is a time where both Thor and Loki severely fuck up, and Odin gets pissed, and he sends Thor down to Earth to take over. He's like reborn a human, and that's how his alter ego happens. And he has this whole like messianic arc where he learns how to like be human and vulnerable, whereas Loki essentially had done the same thing and at the same time. And Loki's punishment was being tied to the underside of Asgard for all of eternity, you know? So there was some pity for him.
Well, I mean, being in that scene, getting slapped over and over and over again, that Groundhog Day is not a fun day to be in. It's not a fun movie to be in.
Well, he gets slapped, then he gets kneed in the nuts.
I mean, it's just like, dude, endless. Stop. endless. But you know, when you think of torture, I know there's probably people on this on the podcast that are listening. It's like if you had to deal with your ex-partner on the worst scene over and over and over again, you'd probably go insane too.
But I think the what becomes clear is that it's not the physical pain, it's not the physical torture. And it didn't matter what she did. If she came in and cut off his finger or chopped off his foot or whatever, it didn't really matter what the pain was, because the real pain, the real torture, was the constant reminder that his life was empty, that he had no connection, and that he would forever be alone. And that was just more than he could bear, until he finally, like you said, he comes to he admits his foibles, sees himself really for the first time.
So that said, you kind of put a nice bow on this whole thing. Sydney, do you have any other notes?
Only that there was a mid-credit scene at the end of episode 4 that takes us into what will be episode 5 for next week, which is right after the pruning. I guess Loki kind of wakes up and he's in like a post-apocalyptic area, and he sees 4 people in front of him. I guess one of them is not human. It is a crocodile. It's an alligator.
Alligator.
I don't know the difference. All right.
One has a long nose, the other doesn't.
Is that a long nose?
Well, the crocodiles have the really thin ones, thin, long noses. Like, get thin. And the alligators have a more rounded front.
Round. Nose. Yeah. Yeah, so I guess that's it. I don't know if I had seen that mid-credit scene last time. I don't ever think to watch for them. Every time we go see a Marvel movie, my husband's like, we have to stay here. Yeah. There's mid-credits.
You always have to stay. That's the most important part of the whole movie.
That was fantastic. I mean, there were a couple, before I comment on that, there's one other segment from the series. Again, it just keeps cranking, just the whole episode, and all the previous ones too. It just keeps cranking story. And when they delete Mobius, I remember watching it the first time, I was like in total disbelief, because up until this point, all we know is that when you get deleted, it's gone. It's over. There's no coming back. You're done. You know what I mean? That's, you're baked. And I could not believe that they've just finally established the connection. It was just, again, great writing. You know, here's these two guys. They've been working together. Mobius is trying to connect with him. They have a chemistry together, and then finally there's the trust, and they believe in each other and they support each other, and you're like, yes. And then boom, you get zapped. And it was just like, I can't fucking believe they did that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but
it was
great.
That's a show, and good writing should take you on a roller coaster ride. You know what I mean?
Well, then once you find out where he went, my mind melted into the couch. I mean, I was like, you are past time and space. You are where everything goes to end. I am here with you.
Yeah. And I think that's the reason they did that cutaway scene, instead of just leaving us with him, with Loki and Mobius getting pruned and not knowing. I think they wanted you to know that there was more to the story.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Episode 5 is coming.
Yeah. But those 4 guys, the Kid Loki, the classic Jack Kirby Loki, oh my God, I loved him. And there's some Game of Thrones like Loki, and then the alligator Loki. I remember watching, I was like, this is one of the best Marvel interpretations ever.
Oh, yeah.
They need to have a cartoon version of the alligator Loki. Yeah.
Well, there's a one-shot comic book coming out. I think it came out in September. I should order it. But yeah, so he's got his own storyline, just like a one-off single.
Yeah, the alligator. Yeah, yeah. So, for me at this point, the show was like the best possible introduction to the concept of the multiverse. I mean, with the time story, the variant story, and then, Doctor Strange, Multiverse of Madness should have been, but it wasn't. It was so weak compared to this. I mean, this show really is what established the multiverse for me in the MCU. And the 4 Lokis.
Do you think they should have done the Doctor Strange in 6 episodes like this instead of the one movie? Could they?
I think the problem with for me for multiverse was that they just there was 2 major problems with that. To sideswipe, I don't mean to sideswipe the podcast.
No, but I asked the question. So.
Two big issues. One is that we don't really find out what Doctor Strange's baggage is, how he's broken, damaged, until the very, very end. And it's kind of this throwaway line about his, you know, having to not been able to save his sister, you know, when she drowned, and that basically damaged him forever, to the point where he's got to be perfect. He has to get the answer. You know what I mean? And it's like, that should have been shown to us. Maybe that should have been the opening sequence when they were kids, you know,
right.
And then we'd see kind of like, you know, some explanation. But so that, to me, that was a big weakness point. You just see him being kind of an arrogant asshole through the whole thing. And then, oh, now I'm supposed to feel bad for him because that happened to him. It's like, I just disconnect. And then secondly, they spent all this time and effort on one alternate universe where, you know, he meets the Illuminati and, you know, where all the fighting takes place and all this. And it's like, Multiverse of Madness, there's, and then we get a 10-second, 20-second segment where they're passing through the different universes, and you're seeing, oh, one's made of paint, oh, one's this, oh, one's cartoon, but it's like, it was throwaway. It's like, we want to see those universes, we want to experience them, we want to, you know what I mean?
You remember that scene? That scene in Everywhere, Everything, All at Once, where they come back as rocks, yeah, like on a cliff.
That was awesome.
That's what we need.
Yeah. Or even Spider-Verse. Have you guys seen it across?
That's what exactly where I was going to go.
Granted, it's cheaper, probably. I don't know if it's cheaper necessarily, but it's easier to do an animation. But still, they should have done more. They should have done more.
I mean, you know, the fact two of the major characters, and when I say major, two of the more unforgettable characters in Loki and in Spider-Verse, Porky Pig Spider-Man and the Crocodile. Yeah. I mean, they're the dumbest two things possible, but you know what? You don't forget them because of what your point is. They have these whole worlds, and I think maybe, and again, I know it's really easy for us to spend Disney Plus's money, but if they did it in a series instead of just a movie one shot, you might have gotten a better, you're going to have better character development. And I mean, who knows? That's why I was just kind of throwing the question out. But I think, do you guys have any other notes for this episode?
I'm noted out.
I'm not trying to push you to finish. I just don't know.
I actually don't.
Okay. Wonderful.
Oh, wait a minute.
right under the gun. I was just about to say the next thing, and then you're out.
Come on, we can't stop without that. We can't finish without just mentioning that Mobius drops that one line in this episode about there being vampires in the MCU.
Oh yeah. Well, what do you think that means?
Well, that's Blade. That's you know, to let us know that Blade is coming. You know what I mean? And then also he says Kree and Titans. And I'm assuming maybe they've had Thanos there.
You know, yeah.
That'd be pretty cool.
Imagine Thanos at the TVA and him doing something with that thing around his neck, and boom. And then he goes and tries to do something, boom. And then when he tries to use the sleeve and it just doesn't work. Oh my God. That would be a great comedy.
Just do
what if?
Yeah. What if?
That could be a great what if. Which, by the way, are you signed on to do the next What If with Jason?
Yeah, Jason and myself and my friend Lenny.
Oh, awesome. Have they decided what type of stories that they're doing yet, or is it still under wraps? They have no idea
what
yet.
What If?
Yeah.
You mean the show itself, not podcast?
Yeah, the show. Do they know the episodes yet?
Well, there hasn't been any public statement about, you know, what the different episodes are going to be. I think it's safe to assume that there was one with Iron Man and Gamora that they did, but didn't include in the first season. So I think there's an assumption that one will be included. I would not also be surprised if we didn't get another installment from the Marvel Zombies universe.
That one's so well.
I theorized yesterday to Kirk that Agent Carter's appearance in episode one of Loki like could be a good what if episode.
Yeah.
Like he asked us, Alex, last week if we saw that Agent Carter like kind of be walked through a time door. So I did go back and look, and it looks just like her. So absolutely, I definitely think it's her. And Kirk, you were saying that you don't think it's necessarily a what if plot, but maybe like an intro to Secret Wars.
Well, it could. I mean, it could be a what if plot. I mean, I think personally, I'm hoping that we will at some point get a standalone Captain America Returns the Stones, you know, movie or series, just to see, you know, because I mean, there was just so much. Such cool stuff there. Like he left with a no shield, but he comes back and gives a shield to Sam. So you know what's that
about?
Oh my god! You know, he has to go return the Soul Stone, and so he has to actually confront the Red Skull, which you know is basically the whole source of his origin in some regard. So,
right.
I just think there's just a tremendous bunch. And then what happened with you know with Agent Carter. You know, so there's a lot of story there that I'd love to see developed, but hopefully they're keeping that in their back pocket, and that's why we saw that. There's also there's also Deadpool 3 is going to be, I think, their attempt to try and do something more grand than what they did with Multiverse of Madness, in terms of dealing with lots of alternate universes, and I wouldn't be surprised if she shows up in that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So I just looked up because I wanted to see if they had any what if titles out, like of the episodes. And what you said is that what if Gamora killed Thanos? What if Captain Carter finds Hydra Stomper? And what if the Tesseract landed in, oh my gosh, Haudenosaunee Confederacy before the colonization of America? So there's a little bit out, but that made me want to look to see if we have Loki season 2 episode titles. And we don't, so that's a no news kind of news.
All right. That said,
speaking of news,
what other? Yeah, speaking of news, Sydney, what do you got for us we're spending a lot of money.
I was going to say we need a better sound effect there.
This is actually cups and strings, folks. We actually use cups and strings to do this podcast.
Literally, literally.
So is it Sydney or Kurt? Exactly. Or iPhone cords from the 1980s. So just so you guys know, Kirk doesn't actually use computers. He actually uses quills, and he has a whole...
I paint with my fingers. I paint with my fingers.
Well, no, he has a whole, like, a farm of birds that he plucks. For each artwork. So when you get an artwork, if it's red, it's not always just red.
My neighbor actually has chickens, so there's feathers all over the place. So,
oh jeez. Okay, so lay us on some news there, Kurt.
Nope, it's I believe Sydney first.
Oh, okay, then Sydney, drop us some news.
Okay, so Marvel announced this week that the release date for season 2 is no longer Friday, October 6th. It's now confirmed to release on Thursday, October 5th at 6 p.m. Pacific. So for those of us on the East Coast, that means we will be watching on Thursday at 9 p.m. And then the subsequent episodes are also releasing each Thursday, East Coast 9 p.m.
Can I just say something on that? Thank you, Disney, for screwing our whole entire schedule up. I just want to let you know that. we had a really good schedule. It was going to be great. And then all of a sudden, you got to move it a day behind. And now we got to, like, you know, Sydney and I have to put our kids in the basement, lock them up.
That's where he is right now.
Yeah, and with the big ball and chain. Kurt's got his chickens to deal with that he's going to steal the eggs from. I mean, Disney, you're killing us. All right. Thanks for that. But they're going to probably just raise the price.
Well, they are raising the price.
I know. I'm saying they raised the price so they can move it back a day. All right.
There's a new hype trailer out on Marvel's YouTube page. It's called, for Loki, it's called The Amazing Loki Featurette. Sydney put a link to it in the Loki threads on the Podcastica and the Zedhead chat threads. So give me any thoughts you have about the new content.
Well, I feel like I pulled two pieces of key information from this one. So Kevin Wright is one of their executive producers. So like in this featurette, you kind of flash back to him being interviewed, and he says one important thing to me. He says, rest assured, our Loki will be with our Mobius. So I know that, like, it's such a complicated story. And after she kills He Who Remains and Loki just shows up back in the TVA and no one knows who he is, like, where did he go? Like, I think it's so easy to say, well, he went to a different TVA altogether. But as I said earlier in this episode, I think it's more that he's gone back in time. And I think that this sentence really is like supporting evidence for that, that he's gone back to an earlier version of the TVA and that he's meeting with our characters. And again, that it's like before He Who Remains put other people in as the figureheads. And like, I don't know why I feel like I need to argue this point so much, but my other point for that is that I don't think there would actually be other TVA versions out there because our TVA does exist outside of like timelines and universes. So I don't think competing TVAs
that's
out there.
That's a really good point.
A unique entity outside of time and space is what I wrote.
Yeah. No,
you'll also put those in the show notes too. So the people that aren't on the Podcastica Facebook page can get that.
I'll send you both YouTube links after this.
Yeah, we'll definitely put it on. So whose turn is it? Is it Sydney? I think it's your turn.
Well, did anyone else have anything else to say about the featurette? Because I have another point for it.
Please go.
Well, I'm not even sure what my point is. You know, like you have to like understand the notes you write, and then I'm not sure I'm capable of that. But we see Loki in the back of a TVA pickup truck. So I think I said earlier that I think that it might be Sylvie driving it up front. And then I think I see like a wing coming off the side of it, but it kind of disappears into the right-hand side of the shot pretty quickly. But I mean, I don't know why I think that's like a monumental point, given the fact that we see cars flying around all the time in the TVA. And then we also have clips from the like official trailer of the mail truck flying backwards into the window of the TVA hallway.
Right,
so,
almost like it's rewinding.
Yeah. And that's it for that one. I'm next with the news then.
Yeah, I want to just add one thing. I think that the thing that I can't decipher from the trailers yet or this new featurette is the status and the mental state of Sylvie. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what's going on there, because she accomplished her goal, but yet, you know, does she have regrets? Does she think that was probably now a mistake, or is she glad she did it still? She obviously hooks up with them, but I don't think it's just going to be, oh, let me join your squad. You know what I mean? I think it's...
They go looking for her. Right. And it seems to me that some of the biggest action sequences they show us in the trailer, which I would assume are kind of towards the back half of the season, are finally when she's holding hands with him and together they burst out this giant green power strike. I think that they're going to have to kind of convince her that it's okay. You know, like, I think she's probably feeling bad, maybe.
Did they, and I probably should know this, is this the second and final season, or is there a question that there's going to be a third?
We don't know. Yeah, I don't think there's been any.
It's still up in the air. Yeah. That's my point. It's still up in the air.
I don't think so. My guess is no, because I believe this and Deadpool are going to kind of lead us into the Secret Wars. I don't think that there's going to be more multiverse other than little bits of it in the different movies. You know, there's something in the Marvels, I guess there's some sort of element of the multiverse that gets just, you know, brought into the Marvels movie. It's coming out in November.
Okay. No, I was just curious. Cause you know, if that's the case, we could have a cliffhanger that we could be doing this all over again kind of thing. And, I didn't read it, but then again, I'm not on top of the news like you two are. So
I think we'll hear something soon. You know, if they're going to renew it for season 3, I think we'll find out during season 2. We got that.
Sorry, go ahead.
No,
go ahead. It's not news related. I was changing it too. So you change it first.
Okay. So we didn't just get this one hype trailer this week. We got a second one. I think it was like yesterday, and it gave us even more content. I don't know if you guys got a chance to see it, but the only thing I can say about Sylvie there is that it seems like they've got a hold of the Zaniac character, who we saw a number of times in the official trailer. And Sylvie's kind of throwing him up against a car, like looks like kind of good guy, bad cop, good cop, bad cop, because Mobius is standing right behind her. And I think that's pretty exciting. I kind of want to know if she knows this Zaniac variant or the Zaniac bad guy or whatever he is, from some sort of like, is he the postman? Imagine that. So what else did I see in that? I saw Loki walking down the platform in space that heads towards the sacred time, like the giant physical manifestation of it. And he doesn't have to wear a spacesuit like Mobius does because he's a badass. But yeah, that's it.
Well, you also pointed out to me that there's the picture of him talking on the microphone to someone out on the platform. And I said, oh, well, I think he's talking to Mobius. But you showed me the picture and Mobius is there. So who's out?
Inside? It does seem to be that round interior control room with the glass walls that looks outside, and and Loki's holding like a teal microphone, and they seem like it's very important, whatever he's trying to establish to the person listening outside.
Well, my guess is that they somehow, Victor Timely is trying to help them. I think they go back to get him. And then I believe they bring him to TVA to try and help solve this problem. So perhaps it's him out there. Maybe Loki goes out once, maybe Mobius goes out once and they can't get it fixed. And then they go get Victor Timely and he gets involved in trying to fix it. I don't know.
I love that.
I don't know.
That's great.
Just a theory.
I'll take any theory.
I forgot to mention that I also wanted to comment on, I thought the action sequences in these two episodes, especially the fight scenes with Sylvie in the TVA, which I guess was in episode 4. I thought they were standout. I thought they were great, well choreographed, really well done. And you know, Marvel's always done a great job with fight choreography, and this was no exception. But what I liked too is that they've always had this kind of tendency with women characters to women heroes to have a kind of a similar fighting style, which involves kind of using their body weight to
wrapping their legs around your head.
Try and counter the difference in size of, you know, fighting a large male opponent. But this one, they didn't do that. She beats the fuck out of everybody straight up, you know, and I thought it was pretty cool.
Remind me who she fights.
She fights guards in the hallways. That's the ones that's standing out in my mind. There's obviously the run through that town in the episode 3 where they're fighting people constantly, but that wasn't really what I was talking about. It's more when she goes to the TVA and she encounters all these guards and she just kicks
she's like throwing haymakers.
Kicking the crap out of them all, you know what I mean? And not jumping on, you know, Black Widow style and twisting their necks and flipping them around, you know? So I thought that was a nice change of pace for the Marvel female hero.
Yeah, I always thought that this Black Widow thing was like overly sexual. Like, you do not need to wrap your legs around someone's head like every 5 seconds. I mean, I thought it was just for the male viewers. That one, I liked the scene in the beginning of episode 3 where he gets...
Wait, I gotta say this. I love when her sister's like, "You're doing the move again."
Yeah.
What move?
You're such a poser.
Black Widow move. Yeah, you're posing. You're such a poser.
and then she does it.
She's
like, "Ugh." I think that movie is so underrated. I love that movie. I've watched that movie 3-4 times. Oh God, I think it's great. It reminds me of The Winter Soldier, which is my number one favorite Marvel movie of all time.
Really? Yeah. We're not getting down this
let's fight about it.
But
I'm in this text chat with these two, and I felt like I was a little boy when your parents are fighting. And I'm like, "Mom, Dad, I'm just gonna just stop already."
I was winning.
They're arguing. They were arguing over some Marvel point that I lost like 5,000 texts ago, and I just let them go. But it was really funny because we're not going down that.
But anyway, I think Black Widow is a way over criticized and way underrated film. That's just my opinion.
I just wish they didn't kill her off the way they did. I mean, it's like, dude, come on. Like, there's so much good story they could have done with
her. Yeah, but I think, you know, she had been with it 10 years. She was ready to do something else, I guess. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, I guess. Anyway, can we get to this next piece of news?
Fuck no.
All right. So,
what,
this
you
is
got a soccer game to go to or something?
No, a field hockey game at 3 o'clock, and it's only like 11 o'clock in the morning now. So I'd like to get there on time. No, just kidding. All right. So let's go, Sid.
Okay. So this is a breakdown of the J Majors court case that is, we said last week, was continued into October. This breakdown comes from the Everything Always YouTube page. So
dun, dun.
Prior to his Jonathan Majors September 6th court case, the defense team issued a full motion to dismiss. And so the prosecution has until October 6th to respond to the motion to dismiss. And then the defense can weigh in. And then by October 25th, the judge will rule on whether or not this is being dismissed. And so the push for this dismissal stems from newly released video footage that was apparently kind of kept hidden from the prosecutors,
by the prosecutors.
Yeah, from the defense team. And so the evidence, it is security cam footage from after the time point that the assault was recorded to have happened. And in the video, you do see Grace Jabari using her right hand to hold a cell phone, and she takes off and she puts on a heavy coat and she pulls her hair back into a bun. The defense argues that this could not have been done with a fractured middle finger, which was injury brought as evidence initially against JM. Another complaint from the defense is that the footage had not been marked by the district's attorney's office. The prosecutors turned it over late, and they had it placed inside of 2 terabytes of data. So not marked and maybe considered to be hidden. It does look more possible that the case will be dismissed, but we won't find out until October 25th.
She also claimed that her ear got cut and was a mess because of the assault. But in this video, this new release video, there's no bloody cut ear in the video. So that kind of,
I know. And I actually didn't say that part because I didn't know. I don't feel personally like you'd be able to tell as much. I mean, I don't know that she was saying that her ear was like gushing blood, you know? I mean, there could have still been something there that we couldn't see, but this is paired with, I mean, and now we're just talking celebrity gossip, and I apologize, like, honestly, sincerely for that. But I mean, I think TMZ had video footage of her as well later on in the night in a club, you know, and she didn't seem like she had a broken middle finger at that point. You know, she has also said that she takes it back, you know, so there's that. She's also been charged. This is an extremely tough case to talk about as a female. I believe women. I know that there have been other people who have said that he is a complete and utter jerk. All of that being said, if this is dismissed, I'm perfectly fine watching him and as an actor and supporting him moving forward as Kang. I wouldn't work with him and I wouldn't. But I mean, this is in the hands of the legal system, and it sounds like it could very well be dismissed. If it's not dismissed, that could mean that the prosecutors have more than we personally know. And that will be something to watch play out.
Well, I think for me, the news here was that there wasn't just a continuance, but that there was an actual request for dismissal by the by the defense. And to me, that when there was all that information leaked out about the fact that they had video to document and prove their case, you know, prove their innocence and all this stuff, I was like, yeah, but then why is the prosecutor continuing with this case? You know, I mean, if he must have more that we don't see, but, and why aren't they trying to get it dismissed? And they are. So, we'll see, you know, so I agree with you. It's a really horrible situation because it's just like a no win. You know what I mean? Cause it's like, if he's, you know, not found guilty, then, you know, he's still tainted by all of this. Plus there's so many people that, you know, have come out and said that, you know, he's got questionable habits and attitudes and, you know, but then if he is found guilty, you know, she's being dragged through the mud and made to look like she's making stuff up, and that, you know, ruins her life. And it's just, there's just no, there's no winner here, you know.
No, yeah. There isn't.
But I do applaud Marvel though for finally, you know, letting this play out before making decisions. You know, they're like the rest of us. They don't know which way this is going to go, so they should wait. And I, you know, they jumped the gun with James Gunn, fired him immediately, reflexively, to, you know, all the outcry. And boy, did they pay for that. You know what I mean? That was a huge mistake, because that all blew over. Turned out to be, you know, some stupid stuff he did when he was practically a teenager still. And they were just tweets. And he's gone on now to become the head of DC, and probably will, you know, be a big pain in the butt for them, because they're going to draw a lot of their business away. You know what I mean? James Gunn is going to transform DC. I'm telling you, DC movie. Movies are going to be like Marvel. They're going to be good again, and they're going to be strong, and they're going to draw a lot of the money out of that pool. And Marvel's going to be kicking themselves.
It's good when you have strong both DC and Marvel, because people love all these characters and they want to see them in either different universes or different situations. And, you know, the old classics, the Supermans, the Batmans, the, you know, Hall of Justice, all of these type of characters people want to see as much as the MCU. So if that's a war, if you want to call it, I think most of the fans are going to sign up for that any day of the week. So, and we'll be here to cover it. So that said, any final thoughts?
Not from me.
Peace, love, dove.
To wrap up, if you want to reach us, you can reach us a couple different ways. You can go to podcastica.com or you can go to our Facebook group, Podcastica. And if you're there and you want to leave us some feedback, you can do it a couple different ways. You can email us on talk@podcastica.com, or there's a little button there you can record a voicemail. If you want to catch up with us for next week's episode, we're going to be doing episode 5 and 6, which are going to be, let me get it because I had it. Next week's episodes are going to be Journey into the Mystery. And then the last episode is For All Time, Always.
Journey into Mystery is the comic book that Thor was debuted in, by the way.
Huh.
Really? Okay.
Cool.
That said, you know, we want to make sure that you guys are ready for Loki. And hopefully this will be one part of it. And we'll probably be releasing episodes for the new season, if it's going to be on Thursday, hopefully on Sunday, latest Monday. So you'll have a couple of days to get your feedback and your thoughts together when that happens. But for now, my name is Alex.
I'm Kirk.
And I'm Sydney. For All Time.
Goodbye.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need, and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line, plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max 1 offer per account.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.